KFMB. San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
Good evening. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you live from KFMB studios on this drizzly and brisk Sunday evening, December 30, New Year's Eve Eve, coming to you with 50,000 watts of power, heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, LA County, up to Seattle on a good night, Riverside out to the desert. And now my pleasure to introduce my illustrious co-host. He's a philanthropist. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He is a core member of Strategic Trusted Advisors Roundtable, and he's a family office expert to many high net worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight?
Doing well. I didn't fall off the cliff, but almost. Almost fell off the cliff, but I did hit a hailstorm driving in.
I heard about that. That's pretty amazing weather we're having. But, the Chargers did win their last game today, and, good luck to Coach Norv Turner. Yeah,
good luck to Norv and AJ and whatever they do in their next career.
Exactly. But anyway, hey, and a shout-out to my brother and his two kids and Franny. They're here from Illinois enjoying some of our winter weather.
They brought
here
the Chicago weather with them.
They did.
Yep.
And but anyway, they're having a great time. They're seeing a lot of the sights. And before we get into the show tonight, I had the pleasure on Christmas Day to attend an event. It was actually the second annual. There's a restaurateur in San Diego who every Christmas Day opens up his restaurant, and they serve free meals to active and retired military and their families. And his name is Johan Engman. He's the owner of Fig Tree Cafes. There's two sites, and I think he's on the line. Johan, are you there? I hope he is. We're getting there. Kevin, what do you think? Is he there? Johan.
Yes.
Ah, there you are. I just gave you a nice introduction. I hope you heard it.
I did. Thank you very much.
Good. Hey, whose idea was to do this, and how did you get involved?
It's actually been done 3 years, twice by me and my restaurant. It was done by in Hillcrest in the community the year before I opened the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
In Hillcrest, and I believe the previous restaurant closed, and mm-hmm. I was approached and asked if I wanted to participate, and, I said, absolutely, where do I sign, essentially. And last year we did about 65 people, this year 95, mm-hmm. So it's been growing.
And the mayor's always showed, Mayor Sanders has shown up, right?
Mayor Sanders did not show up last year. We had a Congressman Bill Bray came last year, and then this year, as you know, Mayor Filner came and spoke to the attendees.
Well, that is great. So we wanted to thank you. Richard, do you have any words or thoughts for Johan as we move on?
I've been to your restaurant. It's excellent.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, there are two hot spots. There's one, the one in PB, which is up on just south of Turquoise on Cass, and then the one in Hillcrest on University between, 4th and 5th, right?
Yeah, I've been to the one on on University, Hillcrest, on great food. So
yeah, well, it was a great event, Johan, and we just wanted to thank you publicly and hope you continue the great work in that respect.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I think next year I might try to do it at actually both locations simultaneously, so maybe we can feed up to 200 of our active duty military.
Great idea. Okay, well, thanks for calling in, and stay warm, and we'll be in touch, okay?
All right, stay dry, guys.
All right, thank you.
Take care, Johan.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Richard, over to you.
I wanted to give a fiscal cliff update since I got off the phone with my policy guy before I came over here. Of course, Congress met today, but they did not get anything finished. They're coming in tomorrow, which is Monday, December 31st, for those of you who've lost track of time, at 11 a.m. Washington time. So they're not making it an early start, which gives them 13 hours to get something done before we fall off the fiscal cliff. The prediction for tomorrow is they will probably come to terms on a few items and then kick the bucket down the road post-inauguration on bigger picture items. What will probably happen tomorrow is we may see three things happen. We may see an extension of the unemployment benefits. We may see an extension of the 2% payroll tax relief. And to offset that, we'll see ordinary income tax rates go up, probably at the $250,000 limit for married couples filing jointly.
Mm-hmm.
Although Obama may acquiesced to something like $300,000 for single and $400,000 for married filing jointly. But beyond those three topics, there probably isn't going to be much that gets done. Yeah. And it's problematic that those three things might even happen tomorrow. Now, here's the really interesting thing for employers out there, for businesses out there, you know, where your pay period ends on December 31st, which is tomorrow. Most companies don't cut checks until the next business day after the 31st, which in this case would be Wednesday, January 2. The question becomes, what on earth do I do about the 2% payroll tax relief where it was earned in 2012 but not being paid in 2013? And the answer is you want to, according to the IRS, you want to follow the rules that are in effect on the date of payment. So if you're cutting checks on Wednesday, January 2, you want to use the 2013 payroll tax tables.
But we're not sure what those are yet, right?
Well, we're not necessarily sure what those are yet, so it's hard to do.
All right.
So anyway, so how's that for some answer? I guess you could always cut checks tomorrow, December 31, for December 31 payroll. Then you know you're good to not withhold the 2% from employees, that the, you know, the payroll tax relief.
But quick question, though, Richard.
Yeah.
Yeah, is the media overreacting a little bit on this? Because, I mean, before these tax cuts, were we over the fiscal cliff already before these tax cuts, took place? Or,
of course, Joe, of course the media is overreacting. That's their job.
Right.
It's the job of the media to overreact.
And get sensational, right?
Because let's look at a worst case. Here's the worst case, that if we fall over the fiscal cliff tomorrow, yes, income tax rates are going up and spending cuts are going to be made. And the market might be affected in the short term.
And the national debt will go down.
But what will happen fairly quickly is we'll then have income tax relief for, you know, $250,000 and below.
Mm-hmm.
That will happen pretty quickly. We'll probably get unemployment benefits reinstated pretty quickly. We'll probably have the 2% payroll tax cut come back in pretty quickly. Whether we fix some of the issues with spending real quickly would remain to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to be as bad as people think. Because I think, for example, the market's already built it in terms of the expectations of bad news. Those of us on the income tax planning side, CPAs who are helping high net worth or high income clients do planning, we're already sort of planning for worst case scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
So most people out there aren't running around with this really rosy and optimistic outlook that things are going to be grand. We've all been sort of doing planning, both market-wise as well as income tax planning-wise, and certainly regarding estate planning-wise.
Well, I mean, it's going to require spending cuts, too, and it seems like, you know, the right wing's always been in favor of spending cuts, so...
Here's the thing, though, on spending cuts. For example, money that the IRS owes taxpayers who still haven't gotten refund checks. If they get IOUs, they're actually going to get money. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's practical issues. Are employees of the government going to get paid? Practical issues like that exist.
Mm-hmm.
But... overall, I think bad news has already been built into the market. It's been built into income tax planning. It's been built into estate tax planning, at least for anybody who's been paying attention and has been doing planning. And so I don't think it's going to be as bad as falling off of a cliff sounds. But, of course, the media is overreacting to everything. And, you know, it's a great, great fodder for Republicans to blame Democrats and Democrats to blame Republicans.
Well, I mean, we did talk about, you know, GDP as a percentage of, the debt, and we're already at over 100%.
It's an untenable position to hold,
things have
to change.
Yeah, yeah.
And obviously that's going to be a combination of raising revenue, which is increasing taxes, and reducing spending, whatever form that might take. So, you know, I don't think we'll wake up Wednesday morning to, you know, all the lights being turned out and, you know, people running amok in the city.
We made it past the Mayan, the end of time, according to the Mayan calendar. So.
Yeah, if there's any Mayans out there, if you could call in, I want to talk to you about that. Yes. I just want to know what your next prediction is, since you sort of blew that one.
We didn't go over the Mayan cliff, so I guess we're going to survive the fiscal cliff.
I'm like, how do you explain that one away? I'm just curious. It's like, oops. You know, one miscalculation, the world didn't end, darn.
Well, same thing. I mean, from what I read, that was another misinterpretation, that they never really did predict the end of the world on that date. That some person, you know, started spreading that aspect of his interpretation around, and it took off, you know.
Yeah, it never made sense to me anyway, Joe, because we have time differences. So it's like the world ends in New York 3 hours before it ends in San Diego. It's like... you know, if we saw that coming, we'd just get on a really fast airplane and keep flying west,
and we would
live forever.
We'll stay ahead of that.
Hey, anyway, we've got a really good guest tonight. So instead of wasting time talking about the end of the world and the fiscal cliff, we shouldn't do...
Film.
We
yeah.
should...
End of the world happens.
How about introduce?
Yes.
Introduce Sean Puckett, the world's best banker from Regents Bank. And Sean, quick question. The fiscal cliff doesn't really affect banking per se, but it must be affecting clients who do business with banks. What are your thoughts on the fiscal cliff?
Well, first of all, let me say I'm excited to be here because I survived the end of the world. And I've recently sharpened my blades on my sled for the physical slope. So I am ready for everything. My view on the fiscal cliff is this. You know, anything that policymakers do that doesn't support small and medium-sized businesses affects the heartbeat of the American economy. And, you guys were talking about different impacts. And people need to understand that when a small or medium-sized business is growing rapidly, they're being taxed on their profitability, but they don't necessarily have that cash to pay themselves the exorbitant amount of money folks think they're making. So they're being taxed on their profits, but those profits are retained in the company. And the company needs that to hire more people. So, obviously I'm pro-business and I'm pro-growth for the businesses. And that's my viewpoint.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of profitable companies, we can talk about this a little bit more in the show, even though they're making a lot of money, it doesn't mean that their cash is increasing. In many cases, it means their cash is decreasing because the profit is reflected in things like an increase in accounts receivable, an increase in the amount of inventory that they have to house. So, to the extent that businesses or business owners don't know tax rates, either for individuals if you're a flow-through or a sole provider, or corporate tax rates if you're a C-corp, to the extent you can't really build really good cash flow income taxes into really good cash flow planning. And you might say, well, what's 3 points here or 3.8 points there or 5 points there? It can be a lot of money when you've got to meet payroll twice a month. And So the uncertainty, I think, is the real difficult thing for business owners right now. I think, well, the American public, I've been watching the news all week. I mean, the American public is fed up with Congress. They're fed up with Republicans and Democrats both because nobody can seem to agree. And I guess the question is always, why does it always take so long? Why do we always get to the brink of disaster, or at least what the media says is going to be disaster, and leave ourselves now with 13 hours tomorrow to try to solve all of our fiscal problems? And it really, you're right, John, it really does take a toll on business owners, small and medium-sized businesses that are successful, because those folks have a deer in the headlights look. Like I said, they don't even know what to do with payroll on Wednesday. think about that. That's a really bizarre result. So, Sean, we always ask our guests to introduce themselves, a little bit about your background, why you're in banking, who you are, where you came from, what kind of sled you had to get through the hail tonight to get here. Tell us your life history, okay?
Well, I'm the son of a retired Marine officer, so I grew up in the military in California and Japan and all kinds of other states. But, I went to school at USD, and I found a love for advising small businesses. And so I've been doing that for the better part of the last 15 years. And, as a banker, I'm a trusted advisor to small and medium-sized businesses here in San Diego. So I have a vested interest in their success and the success of the San Diego community. And so I do that through my work at Regents Bank as the first vice president. I work downtown, and my day is made up of finding good companies and making them stronger.
And you won a prestigious award last year. I guess it was this year, but we're almost over with this year because, I mean, your influence, it just radiates from you. Could you tell us about your influential award?
Well, I was voted one of the 21 most influential people in San Diego under 40. And that's partially your fault, Richard, for the work that we do at STAR together and bringing the business community closer through our collaborative advisory approach.
Yeah, I was really happy for you, but the part that I really find distasteful is the under 40 part, because because I don't qualify. So
that was a daily transcript, wasn't it, I think? Hey, we have to take a little break here right now, though, so stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life after these announcements. All right, we are back with It's Your Money and Your Life with Richard Muccio and our guest vice president of Regents Bank, Sean Puckett. Take it away, Richard.
I'll take it away, Joe. Hey, Sean, question for you. I want to differentiate. I tell my business clients, I always ask them an interesting question. I ask them to name their banker, but a lot of my business clients that can't really name the name of their banker. They can only name the name of their bank, which sort of scares me. And it sort of, to me, highlights the difference between big banks and community banks. I don't want you to rip on big banks. I'm good enough at doing that myself. but can you tell me what a community bank is and why community banks play such an important role or function in our small to medium-sized business economy?
Absolutely, Richard. I'm going to start by telling a story. I was having brunch with a friend of mine that has been on the fastest growing San Diego companies list for the last 4 years in a row. And he told me an interesting story about a big bank he used to be with. He couldn't tell you who his banker was either. He was just with the bank. And so after winning the fastest growing company award a couple years, he got a letter in the mail from his big bank saying that they were turning off their line of credit. While they're hiring new employees, growing. And so what happened, and what happens a lot, is they just fastened the belt, and the owners didn't take a salary for 5 months, and they bootstrapped it. And because the pain of changing banks was perceivably so difficult, they actually stayed with the bank for a couple more years until they understood the story of a community or a regional bank. And once they understood the value, they just made the change last year. But, you know, that's a perfect case.
Hmm. So as a community bank, or as a banker who I consider you to be very consultative or collaborative, or both actually, as well as extremely influential and under 40, but can you explain the role that you play in terms of actually working with your business clients? Because it's a lot different than a lot of bankers I've met who sort of look at numbers on paper and that's it.
Yeah, I can. You know, at Regions Bank, we call it consultative banking. Well, what does that mean? Let me translate it. Consultative banking means that we converse and listen to understand what is most important to the business owner at the time we're talking to them. And after those conversations have been had, and only if needed, will we present any financial products or services. You know, it's been my experience that after a conversation, oftentimes what I hear is that they need expert advice. And it might be advice outside of my spectrum, so I get my Rolodex out and introduce them to the top experts in whatever area they're struggling with. So it comes from trying to understand what's driving that business owner's needs and coming from that place. So if I sit down and identify the mission and vision of that company, then I'm going to be better suited to give advice.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the advice has to be in line with the mission and vision of the business. Here's the challenge that I see with a lot of business owners. They'll say, well, I met with so-and-so. They seemed like they were really good, but this monolithic bank said that they could do the line of credit at 75 less basis points. And there's a danger there from my perspective as an advisor to successful businesses, and that is that you're not going to get a consultative approach. You're also going to be putting yourself at risk for the whims or the decisions that the higher-ups in the bank make about whether they want to serve certain industries or types of businesses or sizes of businesses. That is to say, you're putting yourself at risk for getting a letter like the letter that your associate got. Would you agree or disagree?
I completely agree, and I would say that if you're making banking decisions in that way, you're leaving yourself wide open. The continuity of a credit relationship could be the lifeblood of a company, and at a community or a regional bank, they're going to be making that decision locally, and they're going to understand. It kind of gets back to what the difference between a regional or community bank is and a big bank. You know, at a regional bank, you're going to have more access to the decision makers. The decision makers are in town, and you can sit down across the table with them, and you can work out a solution. If you're a great company and you're just cranking, and you come across a couple of tough years, you need to be able to sit down with a decision maker and work out a plan so that their banking relationship stays intact, the credit stays intact, and in the end, sometimes your business stays intact.
Yeah, I think one reason, you know, back in 2008 when the economy crashed, I think one reason why there were a lot of companies that had, well, I would say banking relationships, but they weren't really relationships. So there wasn't a lot of interaction going on from the owner to the banker and back and forth. And when things started going haywire, banks being risk adverse, they simply cut credit off or said, just pay us back. We're not going to renew the line. You know, we want to preserve our risk position, get our assets back. And all of a sudden, businesses they didn't really incorporate, I guess you could say, into their financial plan or their business plan what their banking relationship meant. And I think that was exacerbated if business clients were with larger banks. I think if they were with smaller or community banks, they were able to sit down across the table from people and actually have discussions. I think one of the real strengths of Regions Bank, it's the people behind Regions Bank, obviously Sean himself. But Sean, talk about the president of your holding company, Dan Yates, and the president of your bank, Steve Sefton.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Those guys really show what leadership is about in terms of steering this bank, and they're a big reason why we're in business today. You know, there's just a little over 7,000 banks, which is half as many banks as there were 20 years ago. So we've obviously survived the recession. We've come out strong. But listen to this. I've worked for a large bank. I've worked for three different size banks, and you know that, Richard. I'm going to tell you that when you work for the largest banks, you don't have access to the president. You don't have access to that level of talent. And, you know, I've taken both Dan and Steve out to meet clients. And you know what they do when they show up? They do the same thing I do. They want to find out how they can make that business stronger. They want to find out how they can get underneath what makes that business successful and support it with all of the, you know, experience and talent they have. And that's a big difference than taking a client out to lunch and politicking and saying, I met the president. You know, they really roll up their sleeves, and I appreciate that. They're entrepreneurs.
Yeah, they are. I mean, they know business.
Wow. And we have to do a little business
right now. I hear music in my ears.
You do. We've got to do a little business right now. We'll come right back after the new sports weather with more of It's Your Money and Your Life. Stay tuned. There's that great bonanza music. We're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life, and over to Richard to thank some sponsors.
Before we fall off the fiscal cliff, I want to thank all of our sponsors. That'd be UBS, Mr. Michael Coranter, and Mr. Drew Freitas. Thank you very much. Next week's guest, Carl Sheeler, the best business valuation person on the planet with Business Valuations Limited. We can't forget Regions Bank. They're our guests this evening, Sean Puckett, Steve Sefton, Dan Yates. Thank you, gentlemen. Jason Kruger in Signature Analytics. I think the baby's due on January 18th, right, Jason? So if she's about 2.5 weeks early, you can get an exemption this year. Because it might not be worth anything next year after we fall off the cliff. Joel Grushkin in Cost Segregation Initiatives. Thanks for getting the case done for me before the year ended. Really helped one of my clients save tens of thousands of dollars of income taxes. Rich Gaines in Family Legacy Legal. Best estate planning attorney in town. And, of course, our favorite cliff dwellers, also known as CPAs, Polito Epic, Don Epic and Paul Polito, up in Vista, also watching the fiscal cliff just like I am. And we're all in a quandary together, I guess. But anyway, thanks to all our sponsors. And Joe, where can people find out more about our sponsors?
They can go to our website, iymoney.com. Just click on the sponsors tab and everything is there that you need to know. Phone numbers, emails, and synopses of their business, etc. And there you have it.
All right, so Sean, getting back to what we were talking about before the break, I want to throw out some interesting statistics. You mentioned that there's about 7,000 banks in the country now. Compared to at its peak, there were about 14,000, so a reduction of about 50% in terms of total banks and of interest business owners who were recently polled. About 71% said it's important to them to have a personal relationship with their banker, whereas a couple of years ago, only 60% said that was important. So obviously, business owners are looking at relationship or collaboration as being a key component of a banking relationship. To me, this is important. I want to talk about this. When you have a credit established with a bank as a business and you have some difficulties with that credit relationship, let's assume it's cash flow problems. Well, I'm going to ask you a loaded question, Sean. When is the time to bring that to the bank's attention?
Different banks would answer that differently. But Regions Bank answers it this way. It's as soon as possible, so that we can be part of the solution with you. We don't want anything hidden because we feel like we have resources and experience to help our clients navigate out of it. I mean, listen, many of the relationship managers in Regions Bank have looked at over 1,000 companies. They know what a sick company looks like, healthy company, and they know how to navigate that. So, you know, get them involved quickly.
Yeah, here's the answer for you business owners out there. You want to let your bank know that 9 to 12 months in advance. But here's the challenge, and I'm going to rip on CPA since I'm a CPA can do that. The usual relationship with the business client and the CPA is the CPA is just cranking out tax returns and financial statements. So there isn't a lot of forward-looking financial information or forecasting going on. Okay. Well, to be able to ascertain that you might have some cash flow problems coming up 6 or 9 or 12 months down the road, or might not be able to meet your line of credit payment 6 or 9 or 12 months down the road because you have some cash flow problems requires by definition that you be able to forecast and project forward-looking financial data that is based on the history, the tax returns, and the financial statements. So in many cases, the CPA isn't really contributing to the relationship. And so what happens is Sean, tell me if this happens or not, you get a call from a CPA who says, my business client needs a new banker because the other bank pulled the line of credit and they need the money by Tuesday. Can you help? And how hard do you laugh when you get that phone call?
I laugh, but it's still sad because, you know, you're asking somebody to get on a sinking ship, right?
Right. So here's what we need to do. We need business owners to be able to say to their bank 6, 9, 12 months in advance, hey, the cost of cheese is going up in my business, so that's going to affect profits, or I've lost my major customer, or the contract ends in 6 months and they're not renewing. Here's what it's going to do to my cash flow. Let's sit down and talk about what I look like in 6 months, in 9 months, in 12 months, because it's going to have an effect on my ability to service my debt, or, for example, to keep the ratios that are part of my loan covenants in compliance. I mean, wouldn't that be the time to have these discussions, Sean?
That's absolutely right. And you're going to find at the community banking level that the bankers are entrepreneurial and they understand how to think outside of the box and they work in an open architecture. So they can change the covenants, they can restructure the debt and make it so that the banking relationship isn't interrupted and you can navigate to clear waters more easily.
Well, the other thing they can do, and you guys do this, that's why I love you and Steve and Dan, you guys actually have good ideas for businesses too. It's not just, well, we'll change the covenant so that now you're in compliance. It's, did you think about pricing? Did you think about, you know, getting rid of your worst customer? I mean, did you think about doing things differently?
And we're constantly offering that. I mean, I know many of us in the bank are doing CEO lunch and learns, and we're constantly pushing new information, buying clients books, and getting them new ideas. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing that really differentiates community banks. But speaking about branding or differentiation, so we've talked about how community banks differentiate themselves from larger banks. Could you also describe how Regions Bank differentiates itself from other community banks? Because there are other community banks out in the community.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Regions Bank was built on a client advisory model, not a bank or product-centric selling mentality. So every Regions banker prides themselves on that client advisory model. So we kind of call ourselves the premier business advisory bank. You hear me say consultative banking. We really walk the talk. And as an example, you know, we've got access to proprietary industry-specific data. So if my client's in a certain industry, I'm going to make sure that I'm sharing that industry data with them. It's a peer comparison so they can see where they sit with their competition locally and nationally. And then here's an outside-of-the-box thing. A banker, Stephen Friedman, who's notorious around town, is probably the best banker. I'm second to him, probably. But he's, one of his clients is super slick and super, with it with regard to his industry. So, you know, Stephen offered information on that client's primary target client. And so he brought him that industry information. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff that builds stronger businesses. And that's what we want to do, is we want to build stronger businesses.
Yeah, I know Stephen. Great guy. He's got a great slideshow that he sometimes presents to professional groups about, well, it's designed to educate attorneys and CPAs about how to work better collaboratively with business clients and their CPAs and bankers and attorneys all working together for, shall we say, the end purpose of making the business in question more successful.
Yeah, and let me expand a little bit on your question of what makes Regions a little bit different. It starts with Dan Yates and Steve Sefton. You know, they've hand-selected what they think are some of the best bankers, and then they've given them a long leash. They've given them a lot of latitude to make decisions for the bank with the customer. Okay, so that takes away all the layers of bureaucracy that a lot of bankers struggle with. You know, listen, all bankers, they want to do the right thing, but can they? Are they allowed to? You know, and that makes us different.
Yeah, and it really does, because as I said, I actually chased you guys down to be a sponsor because I said I want the best business bank in San Diego to be a sponsor of my radio show, not just anybody who's willing to be a sponsor. I want the best bank in San Diego, and that's Regions Bank. There's no question. So I'm a business owner, right? And it's 2013 in about a day and a half. Do you got any New Year's resolutions for business owners to help them be more bankable? Put you on the spot with that one, huh?
Yeah, I've got a great New Year's resolution. Reach out to your banker, your CPA, your attorney, and any other trusted advisor in your circle, and share with them your strategic plan for 2013, and ask them to shoot holes in it.
Well, that's a great one. I'm going to challenge a business owner. I'm going to ask business owners a question. When is the last time you had a meeting where sitting at the table was you, your banker, your CPA, and your business attorney? Okay, in other words, everybody in the same room at the same time to do exactly what Sean just said, to talk about your strategic plan for the next year, and to ask them not just to nod their head yes, but to actually come back with independent, objective comments and advice to challenge and question what's in there, and to actually have a discussion where everybody's involved and everybody's working for the best interest of the business, where everybody also checks their ego at the door, so it's not one person saying, I have the best ideas, and everybody else sitting here is just an order taker. When's the last time you've done that? If you haven't done that recently, you need to do that. Well, my advice is you need to do that twice a year, regardless of whether you're making tons of money or not. You need to do that exercise twice a year, because otherwise you're probably not getting the value out of any of those relationships that you really deserve. But you can't blame the banker or the CPA or the attorney if you're not. You can only blame yourself if you're not doing that. And so that's my advice for a New Year's resolution. So Sean, let me throw you my New Year's resolution for how businesses work with bankers, and it is as follows. It's get better at doing projected or future looking financial statements. I don't know how banks rely on stuff that's 3, 6, 9 months old, given how fast the economy changes. Do you think that's a good resolution?
Yeah, it absolutely is, because we're constantly looking at rearward-looking financial statements, right? So when you've got projections, it helps the banker understand where you're going, and it ties to where you've been, and then it gives them the opportunity to give you better advice on the structure of the credit facilities or the cash management architecture you need to get to your goal faster.
And I don't see enough use of forward-looking financial statements. And again, I know business owners are busy, don't want to pay professionals tons of fees to do it, but I think it's one of the most invaluable exercises that a business owner can do, is to constantly be looking at the future. And the cash flow projections we'll do the best case, the expected case, and the worst case, and then assign statistical probability to achieving all, because you want to know if things don't go the way you plan, what it's going to look like in 12 months.
Richard, this is such an important topic, and I'm going to lob this back to you. What I see sometimes is some just financial forecasting that is based on percentages, but the underlying assumptions aren't there. The depth of thought wasn't there. They just threw it together. How do you recommend the business owners really get that depth of thought to get the assumptions really tight?
I think there's two critical things. The business owners have to, number one, truly understand their business and their customers. And then number two, the business owner has to understand the competitive landscape that they're in, and you mentioned this earlier, how do they benchmark against the competition? Because I think, first of all, if you don't understand how you benchmark against your competition, you're like the quarterback getting ready to be blindsided, because any change, for example, interest rates go up or you know, the increased lease payment kicks in. If you don't know where you're inefficient and where you're better than the competition, I think it's hard to make intelligent decisions, okay? So that's the first thing. And I think if you don't truly know your customers, if you're just relying on customers to repeat and renew every year, and you aren't, we talk about bankers having personal relationships with businesses. Well, businesses need to have personal relationships with their customers too, because you don't want to lose a large customer unexpectedly or find out you have a dissatisfied customer. Yeah. I think owners need to spend more time with their best customer.
Yeah. Speaking of time, Rich, we have to take a short break right now. We'll be right back with more of It's Your Money in Your Life after these announcements. All right, we're back with our last segment of It's Your Money in Your Life with Richard Riccio and First Vice President of Regents Bank, Sean Puckett. And Sean, you are basically work at the downtown office at 501 West Broadway, correct?
That's right. We're up on the fifth floor.
Gotcha.
How do people get a hold of you, Sean?
Well, they can call me at 619-446-5580, or they can reach me at spuckett@regentsbank.com. And you know, I'd encourage anybody out there that had a business-related question to give me a call. I don't have anything to sell. I'm just trying to provide good advice and, like I said, build stronger companies.
And, of course, the website is regentsbank.com.
So. And you can also find them through our website,
right,
along with a lot of other cool professionals.
Exactly.
So, Sean, in your opinion, what's the best thing or the best one or two things about the banking industry today as we hit 2013?
Well, I just love the return to that community thought, you know, that's the evidenced in the Greenwich and Associates study that you referenced earlier. You know, folks want to know their local providers again, and they want to get back in touch with their community. After the, you know, the recession that we just all endured together and arguably are still in, you know, I love that about it. And the other thing I love is technology has leveled the playing field. So you can go to any community bank in town, and they can offer all the services that the big banks offer, and you don't have to any longer rely on those large banks for that technology. I mean, you could go to the smallest bank, and they've got mobile banking. You could deposit your checks with your iPhone. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, it's really neat stuff, how high-tech it is, which is neat because in the old days, like a loan application with so much paper, somebody would suffer a hernia lifting it. But now we can do stuff without a lot of paper, right? Even though I still think banks handle too much paper. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, it's a pretty paper-intensive business, but we're making strides, especially in Regions Bank. We've got a lot of paperless systems, so once we load a credit file or a new client into the system, we don't have to go get those paper tax returns anymore. They're all electronic.
Another question, Dodd-Frank, one of my favorite topics. How is it affecting smaller or community banks?
Well, it's created some consolidation. So your small $100 million, $200 million community bank, the economies of scale just aren't allowing for the compliance that you need to go through and the people you have to hire. So you're seeing some consolidation. Banks are rolling up into at least usually a billion-dollar institution for those same economies of scale. And, you know, there's still some uncertainty with Dodd-Frank and how that's going to apply to the largest banks and the smallest banks. You know, I've actually got a study here that's appalling. I think over half of the rules in Dodd-Frank have already expired, and they didn't do anything about them. So they made it so complicated that they couldn't even, the government couldn't even comply with the expiration dates. So it's a little bit of a mess, but we're all going to navigate through it together.
Now, that was the mini fiscal cliff, getting us ready for the big one tomorrow.
Yeah, but, right.
So I know Regions had made some acquisitions in the not-too-recent past. Are you guys still growing or looking for possible acquisition targets?
Absolutely. We're really excited about our newest partner, California Community Bank, you know, which doubles our presence in San Diego. And our family of banks through Grand Point Capital is approaching $2.5 billion. So we've got the girth to really go out there and attack the market, and we can lend to larger companies. So yeah, it's all great news. And then I'll also share with you that so many of the banks that have survived this recession, I mean, their capital ratios are so strong. I mean, this before we went into this recession, you know, banks were lending like crazy and really running tight capital ratios. People need to really have faith in the strength and stability of the banking community, the community banking community. You know, we're talking like for Regions Bank, for example, 16.8% total risk-based capital against what the government would define as well-capitalized is 10%. So, you know, the banks are just so much stronger now.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people learned a lot of things, and it was good to see in the banking industry because I think the whole industry is smarter than it was. So I'm going to point you the banking czar for one day. What's the one thing or two things that you would change about the banking industry if you could just wave a magic wand and change it?
I would get some greater clarity and granularity around the difference between a community bank and a large bank. You know, you can't govern these banks the same. They're totally different types of businesses. And so to make the smallest guys play by the same rules as the biggest guys is absurd. And the sooner that we can figure that out, the quicker the economy is going to recover.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, now my final question, I'm going to put both you guys on the spot here. Joe, you're on the spot here too, okay?
All right.
So, Sean, what's your New Year's resolution for 2013?
My New Year's resolution.
Yeah, did I put you on the spot there?
You didn't even give me a heads up on this one.
No, I don't give all my guests the question.
You got to be kidding me. My New Year's resolution is to practice what I preach. I'm always getting my business owners to be more efficient with their processes and find the holes in their business so that they can work smarter and not harder with a little bit more ease. And so I want to apply that to my own business so I'm not killing myself 60 hours a week, and I'm running a smart business.
Well, I think Sean Puckett is the thought leader in the banking industry here on the West Coast. Just my personal opinion. Joe, you got a New Year's resolution for 13?
Well, yeah, mine's boring. It's like most people. I'd like to lose about 15 pounds. So,
what are you going to do about it?
Well, I have been trying to eat more of a plant-based diet. I have lost some weight already, but I'm going to have to obviously, you know, do the cardio and all that stuff. So,
yeah, mine's similar. I'm going to play more tennis, work out more, and run more. How's that for self-indulgence? Yeah. Well, of a certain sense.
And then your eyesight is improving even more, right? How's the...
I got my stitches out, so that was good.
Excellent.
Be wearing a contact lens soon. Hey, Sean Puckett, Regents Bank, thanks for coming in. It was a great show.
Yes.
Thanks so much for having me.
Hopefully we don't have to shovel snow when we leave.
Yes. Thank you, Sean, and thank you, Richard. Thanks, have a great week. Thanks to Kevin Terrell on
Happy New Year, everybody.
Operator. Happy New Year. Thanks to Craig Blanke. Welcome back from your surgery, and thanks to Dave Sniff, our programming genius. See you next week. Stay dry, everybody, and stay warm. Good night.
ATS lease offer is subject to approved credit. To with this payment, numbers 136407 and 134166. Offer expires 12/30/2012. All units subject to prior sale.
I'm so excited to tell you about the December special for Slater Crusaders only. Right now, you can lease the all-new 2013 ATS sports sedan for only $339 per month plus tax for 36 months, and you pay nothing at signing. This is my fiance's dream car. You hear me talk about it all the time. A super low sign-and-drive lease on this amazing new ATS. Keep your cash and use it for Christmas shopping. Your first payment is paid for, as are all the fees and zero security deposit. You're going to love your car buying experience at North County Buick Cadillac GMC. I promise. I did. Again, lease the all new Cadillac ATS with monthly payments of only $339 plus tax, and you get a generous 12,000 mile per year and only 25 cents per mile if you go over. North County Buick Cadillac GMC in the Escondido Auto Park. Check them out. NCBCG.
We follow the story.
They've got to take me out of it.
Then we lead the conversation.
He can be responsible for the largest tax increase in American history.
Follow the leader. 760.